member of the unacceptables. My mind is malignant.
Today, I open up my book for all to see.
And we're just speak our mind alone today.
Yeah.
Our offenses, our pretenses, just poetry.
Welcome to Guru Sciences.
Hello, my name is Ayen Kwal, and I am the Art Physics Coordinator of the Art Sci Lab. I'm here with Ivan Tina, Stephen Lagul, and Agul Kwat. So can you guys please introduce yourselves? Let's start with Ivan and last Lagul.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ivan Tina. I am a researcher and a cultural producer. I'm very happy to be part of this podcast as part of my virtual Africa initiatives and creative disturbance.
Hi, hello everyone. My name is Agul Kwat. I'm from South Sudan and I currently live in the US, and I am the CEO of Peace and Unity for the Children, a nonprofit organization that I started in 2017 to try to lay a foundation of helping with the educational area in the South Sudan, because, you know, where I come from, South Sudan, we have a huge gap in the educational, with our education, how the population, how many people there are educated. So I'm trying to help fill that gap. And I'm currently working with the street children and trying to provide them a means of education. So thank you guys for having me.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lagul Stephen. I'm also from South Sudan. I'm a medical doctor and at the same time also medical tech advocates, so exclusively working right now on creating awareness of technology among medical professionals, especially in South Sudan, so that doctors or health workers could appreciate the power of technology in order to, you know, to better patients' health. And I'm currently living in US. I also run a website that trains anyone who wants to learn computer programming. If you are curious and you want to get that, go to lagustephen.com and you can find more about what I do there.
Yes, I looked at your website and it's not just educative, it's hilarious. I literally laughed. I was laughing the whole time I was reading it. So I really appreciate you creating that for you know, for everybody, for people like us, especially the language you use. I think the language you use is just genius, you know, because it speaks to the people. So I don't know if our listeners know, but the three of us, me, Lagu from South Sudan, and Ivan Tina is from Cameroon. So we are an African coalition here, and we're about to make some real noise. So as you guys heard, Stephen Lagu is a doctor. So in South Sudan, we'll call him, you'll never call him Stephen or Lagu. You'll always say Dr. Lagu. Dr. Lagu, why don't we start talking about the medical scene in South Sudan. So let me just read this, right? A brief history of South Sudan. So since the Republic of South Sudan's independence in 1956 and all through the civil war of South Sudan, the government of Sudan deliberately neglected health services and deliveries to the regions of South Sudan. So the healthcare service offered to the people of South Sudan lacked fundamentals for a long time. And so international NGOs and humanitarian organizations filled this gap by delivering some degree of healthcare, however, only treating infectious diseases and traumatic emergencies. The situation was not exceptional in liberated areas controlled by the SPLA, that's the South Sudan People Liberation Movement Army. And the situation did not change after the government signed the peace agreement in 2005. So after 2005, the government of South Sudan started to deliver primary healthcare services on the same level as that offered by humanitarian organizations at the time of the civil war. But unfortunately, you know, being neglected for so long, the healthcare systems had deteriorated. So there was a huge concern. And the health situation worsened after 2013. You know, there was a civil war that erupted, and so funds were directed towards the civil war rather than healthcare. And so the budget allocation went down and it continues to decline. So in 2017, the budget allocation was 4.2%, and in 2018, it's less than 3%. So it's just getting worse. Yeah, that was a bunch. Just to give an overview. So, Lagu, why don't you, Dictore Lagu, why don't you give us an overview of the situation? And because your goal, or what I understood from what your vision is to introduce this thing called computer science and coding, like to doctors themselves. You want doctors themselves to be involved in creating technology softwares and programs that are able to help people. So there's many areas, diagnostics. So could you please expound more about that? What your vision is for coding in medicine?
Well, I am thank you for that question. I think that's a very important question. So technology is important for so many things, not just health, especially distribution of knowledge. That's one core use of technology. Every day you tap into news source on social media, you tap onto just reading stuff on a computer, you are already using technology. And there are stuff currently where we are here in US that a lot of people do. It becomes like the necessity, the basic necessity for people. People don't even think about it. But in South Sudan, this is something that will take somebody 2 to 3 months or even a year, to just try to learn to do the basic stuff that you're doing. Usage of the basic technology, simple technology just to enhance people's life and to better serve and deliver healthcare system to people who are in need. These are not possibilities in South Sudan. And so this is what we are talking about. We're talking about doctors who graduate, don't even know how to use computer. So how can you expect to keep records of patients? Health of a person is a multidisciplinary thing. It means management of information. But if you don't know how to use the machine that you use for managing patients' information, how can you expect to better serve or deliver a better, a healthcare system? And especially here in US, you see that the level of technology that is involved in healthcare system is amazing. But in South Sudan, we're still using papers, taking the history of a person's disease, we're writing it on a piece of paper. What happens even when you are working out, rain starts, and so there's this day something called big data for health, right? Big data for you to even understand diseases spread in a larger scale. Okay, let's say if you take the whole of South Sudan, big data can help doctors understand better disease pattern, all right? Which area in South Sudan, for example, is affected more by this disease? You get demographics and you have materials that can be even used for study purposes, for doing research. And all those stuff can be facilitated by technology. And this is why when you go here to visit a doctor, your information is already online. You can come back and look at it and see which doctor you have visited, what the diagnosis was. But in South Sudan, when these things are written on paper, in 2 to 3 years, tell me, if a doctor asks you, what disease did you suffer in the past 2 years, would you be able to answer that question? When you are troubled by malaria, you are troubled by the wall popping up here, So
it's interesting you say that, because I went for a vaccine in 2016 here in America, but I had no records of those vaccines. Because when I moved to Colorado, they were like, have you had the vaccine? And I'm like, I don't know. Don't you have it in your computer? So I think this thing is actually, on the management level. I don't know about the details of the U.S. Management, but definitely for South Sudan, for sure, the papers are there. But it goes deeper than the papers, right? You were speaking earlier about AI, and now you were saying about data management. Sorry. Continue.
right. So why I'm talking about data management is that to track disease pattern, to better manage patients, you need to have like a track of the disease they have in the past, right? You need to have all those so you can be able to better, you know, make a better decision. And these days, that's what it is. Computers are used all along to manipulate those data. Now, in South Sudan, why do I say that doctors should invest in technology, especially the distribution of knowledge? If you can't even prepare a PowerPoint presentation well to go and help transform your knowledge to teach your fellow doctors, that for me in itself is already a problem. And so part of what I'm trying to do here is to create that awareness that doctors know how to use the basic technology, which also involve interacting with computers. For example, on my website, you know, I talked about being the creator of the technology, because most of the times I think this is not just South Sudan, but in most cases, majority of us are just consumers. We're consumers of technologies.
Absolutely.
But if you understand just the basics, not something very difficult. If you understand the basics of coding or instructing the computers to do what it is that you want, because that's what coding is all about. It's just really using coding languages to tell the computer what it is that you want the computer to do, you know? So if you learn that, that becomes really powerful. And this is not just for, you know, for somebody who is in health, but even anybody who actually does work with computer will greatly benefit from, you know, from computer coding, because it's just, if you learn coding, it's like you've learned to speak the language of computer. That's what it is. That's what coding is just really all about. You have learned to speak to the computer. You are able to give instruction to the computer, and the computer does what it is that you want. That's just really basically what coding is all about. So if you understand that, fears like, hey, you know, when people talk about tech, you know, there's just a fear, phobia. When somebody, every time somebody talks about technology, people overestimate this stuff. They think it's something like magical. It's something that you have to be really, you know.
You have to be a genius.
right? You have to be very good at mathematics and stuff like that. And in the simplest term, it's just you learning to use English to communicate with another person. It's the same thing when you understand the grammar of computer language, then you speak to computer. It's not something very difficult. Myself too, this has been threatening me for a long time. Even me myself, when I used to see that in the movies, you see those colorful text on a black background, it scares you. You think it's something, yes. You think it's something meant for, you know, for the geeks and stuff like that, you know. Absolutely. But when you understand the language of computer, it's just really speaking to the computer. And this is why probably more and more people right now who have access to internet are finding that learning to code does not need you to go to, you know, does not need you to go to a college, you know, to learn to speak to.
Yeah, absolutely. And you speak about, actually, you spoke a lot about the psychology of computer science, and I would like us to touch a bit more on that. But just you talking about that, like how people associate with technology, right? There's a sort of alienation of technology, you know. So I find it very interesting, because now you're putting together two opposite things in people's heads, right? There's technology, which people are kind of, you know, it's kind of like alien, and then there's people's health, which is something that's so intimate to them, right? So, I mean, guys, I'm thinking about going to like a village, to Haboba, you know, Haboba is grandma, you know, to Haboba and, you know, introducing this technology to her concerning her health. And I'm pretty sure, just as a lot of Habobas refuse to take, you know, the Westerns, I don't know how it's like that kind of thing would interact within the culture, especially since there's that phobia. So I guess my question is, how do we go about bridging that gap? And any of you guys can answer that, because there is a gap. There is a reason that even I, who studied physics and, you know, I did coding for like my first lab, and, you know, I still had that phobia for like how many years after that. You know, I had to teach computer science to kids, and I had that phobia, you know. But as I saw these kids learning, I was like, this is not that bad, you know. But it's like it's hard in your head. So how do we go ahead and like work on bridging that gap?
Yes, I think Ayen, you've just raised a very critical point there. It's not just you, and this is what motivates me, you know, to venture into computer programming, because those fear for computers are unnecessary. And the other problem is also movies, especially people get information while getting entertainment via movies. And in the movies, the problem is that people portray computers as something that is, you know, I don't know what the best word to express it is, but
extraordinary. You know, like something extremely extraordinary that is alien, you know, like it's almost like you have to, it's people who understand it are almost as if they are the superhuman beings, you know?
Yeah. And this is really the thing I'm trying to break. That's the ice bubble I'm trying to break here, is that fear is not necessary, because that is really not how computer should be looked at. Computer should be looked at as just like you are interacting with a person. The minute you understand it, really, it becomes really easy. Think about this one here, like when you meet a new person, right? You are unsure of where to start, or, you know, stuff like that. It's the same level of relations we are talking about here. Let's say if you remember your experience with the first phone that you have, when you start to use your phone, it's mind-boggling. But over time, as you continue to interact with, you really find that using your phone becomes a second nature to you. You don't even have to think about it. You just do certain things by nature. You just do it. That's the same thing with computer coding, right? The beginning of learning computer language is very scary, and the learning curve is very steep in the beginning. And that's what scares a lot of people, because it has a steep learning curve in the beginning. You know, most people quit. And just that point there is another factor that adds into this fear, because those who do not make it, they go, they say, you know, I tried it. It didn't work out. It's true. Yeah. This thing is tough, you know. The thing I'm trying to do through even my website is to break that fear, to say that, please, stick up. It's going to be rough in the beginning, but the minute you understand it, the minute you get it, you get hang of it, using computer becomes really, really, really easy, and you can excel at whatever job it is that you're doing.
I find it interesting that you described the computer as looking at it as if you're meeting someone, as if it's like a friend, right? So what I thought about is like the use, right? Like when you meet a friend, the first thing you do is you find things that you have in common. Mm-hmm. But that friendship, it strengthens when you realize that this friend has my back, right? Like, you have my back, you know, you watch out for me. And so I think that there's a lot of need, because especially when I look at the hospital scene, there's barely enough facilities for everybody. Like, it's definitely understaffed or overcrowded situation in the hospital. So one of the things I see coding in medicine is kind of the healthcare from home, you know, where your doctor can monitor you from home. This is something that it's useful for the current situation in South Sudan. It's something that people would see, oh, this is actually helping me. You know, my grandma, actually, she could live because the doctor was able to know this. So I think it's important that we get the relevance of things to the people so that they can gain trust with this technology.
Ayen?
Yes.
You brought up a very important point there. The fact that you say that hospitals, you know, they tend to be overcrowded. And even like I recently actually saw an episode on Al Jazeera News discussing the whole, you know, challenge with South Sudan hospitals being super overcrowded. And just listening to Dr. Lagu, you know, him explaining how technology makes life easier and more efficient. Just imagine if these doctors really understood how they can use technology to make things even more fast and efficient. Because, like, for example, when I go to the doctor at the front desk, you know, there's people sitting at computer system who immediately just put in my information, and right away they can pull up everything, making it faster for me to move on, to be able to get inside the doctor office, and the next person can go ahead and, uh-huh. and get in line. So because they are doing all the information with their hand and writing it down and keeping file, yeah. like back in the day, that itself slowed down, you yeah. know, how they can actually transition people in and out of the hospital. So imagine yeah. if we were using computer system to enter data and people medical record, they would be able to pull them off faster. They would be able to transition people in and out of the hospital. So, yeah, I just wanted to kind of bring that up. That's actually yeah. a good point that you're making there. So, if our people were to introduce technology even to our healthcare system, that itself would actually alleviate the hospital being overcrowded because we can transition people out faster.
Yeah, but right. Stefan, right. you spoke earlier about being the creator of the technology, right? So for us to find these ways, because I mean it's basic, right? What I mentioned, what Agu mentioned, these are like basic things. But the thing is, as people live in certain situations, they see things, right? They see mm-hmm. things that somebody else wouldn't see. And so they're more able to become creators, you know. But we have to take people into a position where they can see themselves as creators. You know, they can see themselves and identify themselves and see this knowledge as theirs, right? Not the NGO's knowledge. Not America's knowledge or Europe knowledge. This is our knowledge. So what kind of steps do we take to make people understand this? Because it's really important, this mentality that this belongs to me. I mean, we are a people whose land, me personally, I've never been in a land where I say, this is my country, you know, this is my home. I've never had that possession. And so it's really hard to settle down, you know, and do things if you have that mentality, like I'm always on the move.
So again, I think the first thing is really the kinds of thing we're trying to do here is mm-hmm. spreading the message, right? So people like me, people like you, right, who have experience in this sort of technology, and we are from there. We're from South Sudan. All of us are from South Sudan. So spreading this type of message that people like us can do this stuff is number one inspiration for other people to be doing this, because South Sudan has been alienated, because the thing is that people think that the thing of technology is it can be done. It cannot be done in South Sudan. Yet, if South Sudanese, I'm talking in general, if South Sudanese understand technology, then they become creators. They become creators of technologies that is necessary, that is better suited for their situation. You can have Mark Zuckerberg to design the Facebook for you here, thinking that when it reaches to South Sudan, it will solve the problems of South Sudan. No. The problems of South Sudan can best be solved by South Sudanese by themselves. So you can't do this unless you understand the tools that you need to use to solve this problem. So if you have your own problem, you know best what to do. You know best which solutions would work for you, all right? So you can't have creators of technologies in other parts of the world. You can't expect them to create technologies that will go and serve and better suit people in South Sudan. It needs to be created by people from South Sudan by themselves, because they are the people who understand what the problem is. So this is one thing that we need to instill into our people, people like you and me, who have at least grasped the understanding of what technology can do and the good things of technology. We need to be source of inspiration for these people. And we need to keep shining the lights of what good technology, you know, can do, right? Technology in itself, when you look at it, it's what? Using scientific knowledge to solve a problem, isn't it? We have people who are studied. We have a lot of South Sudanese who have studied. We have a lot of South Sudanese who have gone to school and have learned, right? Now, why not put the scientific knowledge into use?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, when you ask about how do we shine this to them, the first thing is just to spread the news. It is not as hard as people think it is. So the minute you can do it, the minute I can do it, the rest also starts to see. This is actually doable. For example, now, the time when I introduced my website on Facebook, see how many people picked it up. Hey, oh, you can do that? How do I start to do this? And then you see people start to open their eyes. Oh, okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can do it too. I can try. I can try to do this. You see, I don't know if somebody also has something to add.
Yeah, I do have something to add to that. In life, you know, when you have a vision or you have an idea that you believe in, it's a matter of finding a way to be able to deliver that message, a way to be able to have others to understand it. So, like, for example, you know, of course, our people, they in South Sudan, they don't really have a good understanding of how technology works, how it serves mankind, you know, those who do use it. So for them, it would be a matter of you and people like Ayan finding a way to create a form of like a platform to be able to communicate with them why technology can be beneficial to them and the importance of it. So in a sense, I'm saying, so it would be a matter of, let's, for example, just listening to you speak to me right now, I'm the type of person who do have that attitude. I'm like, oh, I use technology to log into my email, to Google stuff. But other than that, that's it for me. You know, I don't understand it. I don't think I'm good at it. But just listening to you, you know, it's inspiring me. So it's a matter of you having a stage there in South Sudan, whether that is like a conference center or universities or colleges or high school, and you getting on stage and explaining your experience, your journey, or how you fell in love with technology and saw the value to it. So I do 100% agree with you saying that it's getting the message out, because first you have to inspire the person through words and move them and make them believe. And once they believe, then their body then will take action toward that thing that you are trying to get them to understand. So I think that you, Dr. Lagu and Ayan and many other South Sudanese who do have a good grasp of technology and its benefits to us as, you know, as South Sudanese and how it can help us, you guys have to try to find a way to maybe connect with the South Sudan government and those who are in leadership position that are put there to be able to help the development of the country, and try to see if they can create platform for you guys to be on stages where you can present this. Personally, I do have some connection with South Sudanese government, and I know a few individual. So that would be my suggestion. It would be you guys connecting with these individual and starting a process of educating the people. Because before we can even get to where you can, you and many others like Ayan can develop system that we can use to in South Sudan to solve issue or problem, like you said, we can just take WhatsApp or Facebook or some kind of medical technology people are using here in US and say that's what South Sudanese people need. So you guys would actually have to first educate them, inspire them, move them, and then get more individual to understand it. And once they understand it, then now analyze what are some issues that you guys can use technology to solve this issue, then start creating. Yes. So that's all I wanted to add. I think the key to it is actually getting a platform where you can send out and deliver the message.
Yeah. Yes. Yesterday, Agul and I, well, this yesterday we were talking about the conditioning of the people, right? Mm-hmm. And it's something that has been happening for so long. It's this mentality that's being, you know, put by circumstances, by situation into the mind of many people, right? And it's this thing where you see NGOs, for example, bringing, you know, for so long, because it's, I mean, I'm not blaming anybody, but it's like, it's been just like giving, right? Just giving everything ready, food ready, clothes ready, you know, fish, not giving people fish, not teaching them how to fish. But then the thing is, this mentality, because we were speaking yesterday about, I'm not going to mention because it's confidential, but a city or a town that was given this equipment to farm. And everybody was like, ready, yeah, let's do this. And then, you know, a week later, everything was just left there to sit and rot, and the equipment is there, you know. It's like, it's there, everything's there, the education's there, but the movement is not there, you know. It's like, we thought we could do it, but it looks like we can't. So what's missing, you know? And for me, one of my biggest grievances, like, I hate this so much, is the education system. The way that education is done disgusts me. I'm sorry. I'm being dramatic. But I'm just, because one thing that I hate the most is fat mind, right? I watched this film called, The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. And I looked at this kid build electric generator, using his dad's bicycle, and using that they were able to pump water, you know, from the ground and water the crops. And I'm like, he's using like what, high school level physics? I'm like college level physics, and I've never created anything in my life, you know. So there's this problem where people, like, we get all this knowledge, we get all this information, but it's, nothing is happening with it. Like, it's just sitting there. Like, we have fat minds, obese minds, actually. Not even, it's like we're suffering from intellectual obesity and not doing anything about it. And so, like, I know my experience in primary school, like, I hope that it's better for some people, but a lot of things were memorizing. You know, we'd sit in class and like memorize things, just memorize. Like, it's all regurgitation, and there's no like, and even in the college level, because there's so much like packed in the curriculum, they just want to feed you all of it, but then students end up being overwhelmed and whatever. Instead of, They in my school, we had this one class called modeling physics, where they actually took it slow. They were like, let's allow students to actually discover, invent, create, you know. So even though the class didn't cover as much as other classes, it was very engaging. And you could get out of there saying that, oh, I see how science works, you know. So I think that's one of the biggest problems. And I'm really excited about Agul's vision. She wants to create an institution for education for orphans, you know, and not just regular education. We were speaking earlier about capital movie industry, and you also spoke about like the skills that are able to make you money. You know, they're able to support you here. They're not just empty knowledge, or they're not just you know, so I think it takes a lot to take what you know and make something of it, because it's easy to know things. It's easy to know a lot of things. It's easy to have a lot of things, but then to go and make it into something new, that's a different story, I think.
Yeah, so Ayan, I think the thing is that the truth is that we know that South Sudan has lots of issues, lots of problems, right? Some of the problems in South Sudan are things that, you know, we just can't tackle by ourselves. You know, it requires a bigger scale of, you know, of approach. Some of those, I believe, those are not the things of interest for us here. But I'm talking about what my concern here is about things that young people, even with minimum education, right, you can quickly tap into and transform and assume a career out of it. This is what I'm talking about, because we know the war has been there for so many years in South Sudan. And one of the biggest impact of this is that a lot of people grew up without their parents. And you and I, for whatever reasons, found ourselves here in this fancy country. But when you are back home, you know, there are issues that are beyond really your control. There are things that you can describe as despicable, but these are not the makings of the people who are living there. Nobody applies to be, you know, to be born a South Sudanese for you to find yourself in that situation there. But the point is that how do you and me, for example, act as a source of inspiration, you know, to quickly point those who are in need to resources that can help transform themselves. I'm a big believer in technology because coding is just one part of the thing. And once you acquire this knowledge of coding, there's a ton of things you can do with coding. You don't even need to go to school, right? As long as you have a very good interest in it, that's all what it takes. You can quickly acquire a career, and that career can start to earn you a living. As we wait for the bigger pictures to be solved, but that career can quickly turn into something, and it's easy. It's not something very difficult, you know, to do. And this is why I'm even talking about coding. How I wish when I was a medical student that I have the knowledge I have right now. I could have done a lot of stuff, frankly speaking. There are those repetitive tasks when I was in a medical school. I didn't know how to do, first of all, even manipulating PDF information, turning this information for my consumption, it becomes difficult. But right now, it's never the case. Right now, I can sit in 30 minutes, I can create an application that can start to collect information about my patient. I just tell them, okay, go to this link or go and download this. Let it be on your phone and start filling this form and give me the information right away. I can do that. And this does not need somebody to be the one to, you know, to write this for you. The minute you have the knowledge, immediately you start to implement applications, you know, to start to write. When you talk about app, we're not talking about apps that you have to build at the scale of Facebook or at the scale of Microsoft or Adobe or whatever. No, we're talking about simple daily needed application that you can quickly use to help you as a doctor, as a professional in whatever field you are. Yes, in South Sudan, so many problems, but this is what technology is all about. Technology is using scientific knowledge, just like what you talked about, a young kid using basic high school knowledge to create a wind turbine, right? That is the technology we are talking about. And so the minute we create awareness, you'll start to see that each and everybody starts to express themselves. So this is, for me, really the thing that you and I need to do, because there are problems in South Sudan which are beyond our control. But, you know, how can we help those who are right now trapped there? For me, I believe technology is really a big move, because it opens the door for you for connection. It opens the door for you to do things that otherwise you think, you know, is not possible. So that's really where my stand is.
You just said that, you know, technology is just like going to be the foundation to lead into even other things, you know, that they can venture out into. And you just saying that, it just made me think, even for myself, like there's so many amazing data that I have found out because I know how to use computer to Google things and read about them. So, you know, we know that South Sudan have a lot of political issues. They have a lot of lack of global understanding. Just imagine if every person in South Sudan knew how to use Google, they can look up what is elections, what is democracy, what is this? So people can actually naturally even be able to get global education and information that can be very valuable to them. So I 100% agree with you. You know, technology can really serve our people well, and it can really open even doors for many more things, because maybe there's a young person in South Sudan who love music or they like to play piano or guitar, but if they only had a computer and internet or stuff, then they can log onto it, Google how to play piano or guitar or how to paint, and they can start even learning without even having a classroom. So it really can be a way too for us to help speed up the education process, you know, because building a bunch of school building, you have to hire teachers, you have to maintain the buildings. It's a lot going into it. But just imagine if we just had a facility, large facility, where massive amount of people can come in and through computer system, they can be educated. They can learn information that they need to be able to improve their life and create things. So I'm 100% with you, and I think it's actually an incredible thing. But I'm the type of person, it's one thing to speak upon something and envision it, but it's another to act upon it. So it's a matter of let's take action, and let's also try to help our leaders understand the importance of it, because it doesn't matter how much you and Ayan work at this and try to like pull the people, if also you don't have, you know, the support of the very people leading the people not understanding it, you know, then you won't have the full access to be able to spread it. So first, actually, you need to also convince the leaders, the people leading the people in South Sudan, how technology can serve them, how it can serve their citizen. So I think that's really the next step that you guys need to head toward. And there's so much amazing thing that can really come out of this.
So I think Ivan had a question.
Yes.
Coming back to the discussion, yeah, I didn't want to interrupt it was quite a beautiful moment to witness. For almost 15 minutes, I remained quiet because it was a live discussion between the three of you, and you all sounded very passionate about the topic. And I can understand, because, of course, you know what you're talking about coming from South Sudan, and you know the issues that you have to face. But it's the same, I would say, in other countries in Africa. But at the end of the day, I had many questions to ask to Lagu. But maybe the one that I'm thinking about now for the three of you that I'm thinking aloud is, I'm not sure if I will explain myself after that. But sometime I because my question was related to the technology that needs to be used in South Sudan. But I also believe that we should question the ideology of technology and what supports it, especially when it comes to AI and data management and who owns those like information. You mentioned that earlier on when you say that Facebook is not necessarily the right solution for local problems in Sudan, South Sudan. And behind that, there's the question of who owns Facebook and therefore who owns the data from the people living in South Sudan, is people in California, which doesn't necessarily make sense. So, but at the same time that I was wondering, I was asking to myself the necessity of those technology, I was also trying to understand this kind of emphasis that you made on action. So at the end of the day, my question is, from your point of view, what should be prioritized in a challenging situation like the one South Sudan is facing? Is it the philosophy and the value, say in one case, freedom? I do not want to be owned by a big corporation in the US. Or is the practical, pragmatic solution that it performs in my reality being the technology that we use? So is it good to use a technology because it solves an immediate problem in the reality of Sudan? Or is it better to be worried about the ethical challenges that it's raised? My question makes sense for you or not,
yes.
Stephen? Because,
yes.
Excuse me, I will just frame it in the context of AI and medicine. I had a bunch of questions to ask about AI and medicine and the ethics, the ethical challenges of AI, which is a great technology, but it also comes with a lot of questions, of course. But at the end of the day, I'm wondering what is best, to use the technology and then, I mean, yeah, I think you get my
right idea. Right. Okay, so just to respond quickly here, I think the very first thing, those things when you talk about ethical data or the question of who owns this stuff and all this stuff, those are sort of advanced questions. But in the case of South Sudan, we are talking of, you know, your question is actually about harvest. Let's say we are talking about harvesting. But in South Sudan, we still haven't planted the seed of technology. You get it? So this is the point we are at right now. And when you are still planting a seed, you can raise about ethical concerns. It's when now, when things are there, that's when now you start to think about regulatory mechanisms, how do we make things better and stuff like that. But my concern here right now is, as I see South Sudan needs the basic understanding. We need to first of all plant the seeds of technology. But if you talk about technology, if you take in the global, how many creators of technologies are there in South Sudan? If you look at the technologies that we are using right now, majority of these stuffs are either from Silicon Valley or from other peoples. Basically, South Sudan is a consumer of technology. My concern is to see that the tech creators arise from South Sudan. I want to see the next technologies that we're using in South Sudan, those technologies are created by South Sudanese by themselves. When you talk about AI, AI needs a lot of data. But are we even collecting this data? Do we have technology that captures this data in South Sudan? Who has an AI platform in South Sudan that collects this data? It's not there. You get it? The thing really that which I'm really happy that you guys brought me on here is that I just want to really raise this awareness that, first of all, the South Sudanese themselves needs to start to think small. You know, we're thinking big. Big things, as other people said, big things always start small. Even the million you see, it starts small. It starts by you, me, right? So we need to start thinking small, and then we bootstrap from there. We move, we build upon from those, right? But when we talk about technology, people imagine all sorts of unbelievable things and expectations that you can't even see. Like, if you think about the technology that is taking place right now in US, it has taken a lot of effort for people to do. We need to start that in South Sudan. We need to start thinking small. Our problem sometimes in South Sudan is that we want to get things done so quick, and we don't understand the dynamics of being small and starting from there, and then you progress, right? And this is one big thing that I also see, that most international actors, aid workers or developmental partners, when they go there, they want to implement big things that people don't understand, right? Start small with the people and grow with the people. And this is why studying technology in the smallest term, for example, first of all, learning to just build your own, learning to be the creator, that is the key step. And then from there, like what Madam Agol says, then we can now start to wake up the authorities in South Sudan. But you can wake up the authorities in South Sudan when there's nobody there, all right? What will the leaders do? Leaders are managers by themselves. They manage people's skills. But if you don't have the smallest skills on the ground, if you don't have the creators there, so what are you going to manage? You get it? So the first thing is, we really need to plant that seed, create an understanding that South Sudanese too can be creators of technology, and we can start small. Big things start small.
That is beautiful. I'm going to coin that. Grow with the people. That's powerful. Grow with the people.
Ayan, he made a very important statement. Even for myself with my NGO, I'm really going to analyze and think about, because often we go into areas or community or toward an individual and trying to put our standards on them. Like you actually spoke about it yesterday about standards. Everybody have their standard. So as a someone, you can't just go in with your own standard or your level of intelligence and expect them to be on that, you know, level. So exactly. Like he said, you know, even for like, let's say someone wanted to go do a project to start a manufacturer. Imagine you going in and starting a very too complex, manufacturer that is where the machinery that they have to use are so complicated, it would probably be more challenging and less successful versus if you were a person with simple man, a factory where the machine are so simple to use, then the people can actually get something more out of it. And I think too, you know, another thing with that is like, sometimes you kind of have to like ask the people, like, what do they need, you know? How can you help them? And then together, you can work together with them and share the knowledge that you are trying to give to them, but on their level, you know? Because if you try to start out on a level that is not on their level, they're probably going to either be discouraged or feel like, I can't get this, this is not for me. So I'm really glad that Dr. Lagu, that you understand that, that you have to grow with them, that you have to start small from somewhere, and then eventually it would expand, because I think, you know, you are very correct. I think that's why a lot of the program that the Westerners or European take to African countries, not just South Sudan, that they implement, they don't go successful because the people on ground are not trained, are not prepared for this vision that they have for them. So first you actually have to kind of like train them, prepare them, and then eventually they will catch up. So thank you for bringing that point up. I'm going to personally use it too in my NGO as I'm thinking out of ideas of how I can help these kids that are on the street. Because these kids, they've been on the street for so many years. So they're probably trained of the way of life of the street. So I probably have to first kind of like rechange the way and their structure of how they think, of how they function, you know, and then eventually then I can teach them and introduce them to new things. So first, you know, I'm kind of, and I have to understand some of the things that they have learned on the street and then inspire them to think of themselves as something more than just being street kids. So thank you for that.
I think we're going to end it there. So
maybe Lagu has a final comment though.
Yeah. Oh my God. This is so good. Yeah. Thank you guys. Thank you guys. Okay. Number one, this message specifically goes to somebody who is in South Sudan. If you are in South Sudan and you are listening to this, this is my message to you. Now, I know when we talk about South Sudan, there's nothing that comes out from South Sudan. There's nothing good that people talk about. That is our country. We can change who we are. We can change histories. We have control of what our future should look like. It doesn't matter whether we have bad leaders there, because I know part of our problem in South Sudan is bad leadership. But my challenge to you is that today you have to be your own leader. Just be your own leader. First of all, lead yourself. Lead yourself to start to think out of the box. Me, myself, too, have been there. Part of myself, I grew in Uganda, where things are relatively okay. But when I come back to South Sudan for 9 years, it has been almost like a nightmare. There's a lot of challenges. But out of those 9 years, as I grew with those challenges, it molded me into who I am today. And I'm able to travel and see some parts of the world. You too can make that. And how I did that is through my aspiration with technology. Technology drove me as far as I could. Even today, where I am is all aspects of technology. So however things, difficult things they can, the connections that you have, the internet connection that you have, use it to your advantage. Not just for Facebook, not just Facebooking. The internet should not be the Facebook thing, but use it to educate yourself, right? Now, I know this might sound like something difficult to do, but it's doable. I've done it. I've never gone to school of computer science. I've taught myself how to program. I've taught myself how to code. It helps me in my career today, and it can help you too. You don't need too much information as long as you know how to read and understand English. You can do this too, and it can quickly become a source of income for you who is in South Sudan. Now, in the field of technology right now where I am, mostly I write application for a medical company here, but I also write application for the web. Now, what I see in the industry is that you don't need to be here in US in order to create impact. You can be where you are even in South Sudan there, you can still work for companies here in the US. So this is the message I'm trying to leave you with. Go to my website today, start to discover computer programming. It can quickly transform your life. I do believe in that. Please give it a shot today. Go to my website, lagustephen.com, and make sure you go and start from the beginner. And from there, you can see how life can change. Thank you.
I'm sorry, but I have to add to that. I'm sorry. The first thing I want to challenge us is to make these things in different languages. This is my challenge to us. So your website, I know I'm going to help you transcribe it in English as well, but let's also do it in Tongmonzen. Let's do it in Kakwa. Let's do it in Arabic. Let's do it in all these languages, you know, because what we are saying is we have to meet the people where they are. So
right.
Thank you for your website, and let's keep going forward with it. But I also want to ask Agul to say something brief about the diaspora. Because it's the people in Sudan, but then there's also the diaspora, and there's so many of us. So, sorry, put a goo.
Yes. For my African community there that may have an opportunity to listen to this podcast, what I can tell you guys is that we may find ourselves in foreign countries feeling like alone, or why did it have to be us? Why can we be in our own continent thriving and growing? But like I told Ayan yesterday, that sometimes, you know, some things that seem like a curse, sometimes blessing are hidden underneath it. Because just imagine if we didn't come out into these worlds, you know, into these countries, we wouldn't have had access to some of the global knowledge that we have learned. So just take it, this also see it as a blessing. And I encourage all of you guys, take advantage of these countries that you are living in, whether it's Canada, Australia, and take the time to soak up as much knowledge as you can, and know that the bigger picture and the bigger purpose is for us to be able to be the one to be our brothers and sisters keepers. And how do we do that? It's by taking whatever you're good at and being able to say, I want to go home and share with my people, whether that is Congo, Rwanda, Angola, South Africa, South Sudan, no matter where that is the whole purpose here. And I feel like if you go to Canada or Australia and you don't go make something out of yourself before the time come where there will be a time where all of us have to return to the motherland, Africa, then you would have came here in vain, you know. So that's the really key component. And I want you guys to know that the outside world is not going to be the one to really solve our problem. It's going to take us Africans to be able to humble ourselves and say that we want to be the one to help resolve these issues that we have within our own nation. So it's going to take us, you know, like my mother always said, that when you ask another person to prepare you a bed for you, it's not going to look or feel the way you want it to. So it's the same thing. If we want Africa to be the Africa that we envision, that we want, that we dream of, it's going to take Africans to be the one to develop it, to grow it, and come up with ideas that fit us as a people. So that's what I'm just going to encourage you guys. Never give up. Keep up the dream. Continue to work hard and just support each other and love each other, and know that, you know, God is laying a foundation for all of us to one day, you know, fulfill the dream of people like Marcus Garvey, you know, who said that they want the unification of Africa, you know, one people, one nation, one love, one currency. So that is what we're heading toward, you know, Black excellence, you know. So thank you guys so much, you know, for taking the time to listen to all of us. It has really been a pleasure and honor. And I am looking forward to more conversation with you guys, and God bless.
Thank you.